Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense.
Welcome to the 2016 Puck Soup NHL Awards Show, live from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Because the NHL was so hot that its awards are off the strip. Please welcome your hosts, Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports' Puck Daddy blog, and Dave Lozo of Vice Sports, The Comeback, Up Rocks, Mumble Mumble Something Something.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Oh, you guys are too kind. You know, originally Will Arnett was supposed to host this, but this being television and him being Will Arnett, it was canceled before anyone could find it.
Oh, man. Yes, Greg. We are in Las Vegas, perhaps the future home of an NHL franchise.
That's right. The owner of that team, Bill Foley, is here tonight. And, you know, I haven't seen a Foley this excited since someone finally bought that news radio box set on Blu-ray.
Oh, boy.
You know, some people don't think a hockey team in the desert will work, Dave. They say this is a dangerous place where people give away their hard-earned money on bad gambles that never work out and have devastating long-term consequences.
Yep, that is true, and that's why Bill Foley is excited to announce the hiring of his team's new general manager, Dave Nonis. No. We are excited. We are excited for hockey in Las Vegas, and I think an expansion team here can work. If you want an example of how hockey can be very popular in a mostly barren wasteland despite decades without winning anything, just look at Canada. Oh, man.
Oh, geez. Wow. That's a zinger. You know, Dave, Dallas Stars captain Jamie Benn is here tonight.
Yes. Round of applause for Jamie Benn.
You know, last year Jamie led the league in scoring and won his first Art Ross Trophy. You'd figure that'd make him happy, but he was actually quite miserable, knowing that there was nowhere else for him but to go down.
Oh, no.
What's wrong?
No.
That's something I said?
Oh, poor Jamie.
By the way, Jamie, I saw a lighter and some smoked salmon in the back, but I know you hate to bick locks.
Oh, poor Jamie. You know what, Greg, though? You know who's here tonight?
Who's here tonight, Dave?
Phil Kessel is here tonight, folks.
All right, round of applause for Phil Kessel.
Love Phil, American hero.
You know, Phil actually hit big on the roulette wheel earlier tonight, but unfortunately, the Canadian media decided that Sidney Crosby deserved to benefit from his efforts.
Oh, my goodness. Another robbery perpetrated by the Canadian media.
Poor Phil. Chins up, Phil. P.K. Subban is here tonight, Dave.
Yeah, love P.K. Give it up for P.K.
Yes, give it up for P.K. He's not a finalist for any award. He always just shows up when there's a red carpet and live cameras.
Oh, come on. We love PK.
No. We do. We love PK, though. Nice suit, though, by the way.
You know who else is here is Randy Carlyle. Randy Carlyle, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen.
He's also not a finalist for any award, but all the people the Ducks wanted to get, he was the only one that was willing to show up.
Oh, man. Here. Exactly.
The only guy they can get.
Mm-hmm. If you need Bruce Boudreau, you know where to find him. It's Vegas.
Boy, how about the outdoor games this year? Huh? I mean, the Winter Classic between the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens was the least watched game in the history of the event. Reruns of Law and Order had better ratings than this year's Winter Classic.
You know, the NHL saw those Law and Order ratings and realized, you know, people really enjoy seeing the same repellent characters that frequently avoid punishment for their crimes. That's why the next five Winter Classics will all feature the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Skirting the law. Yeah.
A lot of bad types there for Chicago. But you know who's here who's not a bad type?
Who's that, Dave?
It's John Scott, folks. Give it up for John Scott, man.
That's right.
Story.
Canadian
story
hero
of the year.
In an American All-Star game.
Gotta love John Scott. You know, he went from healthy scratch to All-Star MVP. Gary Bettman even handed him a giant check for $1 million, and Scott didn't even have to join the concussion lawsuit.
Oh, boy. You know, Dave, his life is now being made into a movie. Yep, I sure ruined his life, didn't I?
Yeah, you really destroyed that guy's life.
Boy. Exactly, ladies and gentlemen.
Millions of dollars fame in a movie. Oh, boy. But sitting right next to Scott is NHL Director of Hockey Operations, Colin Campbell, who said that Scott shouldn't play in the All-Star game because he would embarrass his kids.
Oh, come on, ladies and gentlemen. This is an award show. Have a little bit of decency. Come on. He's a guest here.
But, if there's one person who would know something about doing things to embarrass their kids publicly, it's Colin Campbell.
Oh, come on. He played through a broken leg. He's stronger than LeBron.
No, that's his kid. That's Colin Campbell's the bad one. Greg Campbell's the hero.
Oh, right, yeah, Greg Campbell, right.
Colin Campbell used to be in charge of player safety, but the current man in charge of player safety, Stephon Quintal, could not be here tonight. It's kind of sad. He got in a bit of a fender bender, and he was sitting at a red light. He was looking down at his phone when a truck rear-ended his car and sent him to the hospital.
Yeah, that's really scary stuff, Dave. But, you know, Stephon Quintal remained true to himself through all of this. He blamed himself for having his head down, and since the operator of the vehicle was a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Quintal said his license shouldn't be suspended after all.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, jeez.
Boy.
It's not like they're biased towards certain teams or anything, right?
Just joking around, Stefan. But finally, Patrick Kane is here tonight.
Yes, Patrick Kane is here tonight.
We don't have any jokes here. We just wanted to let everyone in the area know that Patrick Kane is here tonight.
Folks, we got a great show planned for you this evening. So why don't we get to the first award of the evening, huh?
Now to present the Vezina Trophy, please welcome Christopher Walken and Bane.
I was like, boy, the crowd took a while to applaud for those two guys. Let's bring it out. Walken and Bane, folks. Bane, there are many goaltenders who had great seasons that are in this category.
Is that how you talk?
Yeah.
What a lovely, lovely voice.
Bane, how are you here? You destroyed an entire Pittsburgh team by blowing it up from the sidelines.
But how does that make me any different than deposed coach Mike Johnston?
Oh. Wow.
The time is at hand to announce the finalists.
The finalists for the Vezina Trophy are Braden Holtby, Washington Capitals.
Ben Bishop, Tampa Bay Lightning.
And Jonathan Quick, LA Kings.
Jonathan Quick is considered one of the three best goaltenders in the National Hockey League this season.
Yeah.
Impossible!
Oh. Bane. And the winner is...
Braden Holtby.
Yes, great. Unfortunately, Braden could not be here tonight, here to accept the award on his behalf. It's Toronto Maple Leafs coach, Mike Babcock.
Braden is the type of player that gives 120% out there. Played good. Liked his form. Liked his stuff. You know what else I like? Winning the draft lottery while rolling in a bed of American money. Suck it, haters. Thank you.
And now for our next award, the Selke Trophy. Please welcome Hockey Hall of Famer Phil Esposito and notorious underworld crime boss and poker player Teddy KGB.
Teddy, to win the Selke Trophy, you need to be an excellent forward, willing to play at both ends of the ice and do it very well.
All night, you must back check. You may get played or to say, he trapped me.
I remember back in 1976, I says to Kenny Hodge, I says, hey, what if we tried to win, we tried to win the Selke Trophy this time. And he says to me, Phil, the Selke Trophy, what are you, queer?
Oh, don't you worry, son. It will all be over soon.
The finalists for the Selke Trophy are Patrice Bergeron from your Boston Bruins.
Hanje Kopitar, Los Angeles Kings.
Ryan Ryan from the Anaheim Ducks.
No Russians up for this award. It's a fucking joke anyway.
Easy over there, Teddy. And the winner is Anji Kopiti. Star Anise could not be here tonight. Here to accept the award on his behalf is Toronto Maple Leafs coach Mike Babcock.
Anjay is the type of player who gives 195% out there. Like his compete level, like his dog. Also, I forgot to mention that I told Kenny Holland that the Detsu contract was some cockeyed Russian bullshit. But does anyone listen to old Babs? No, sir, they don't. Thank you.
Up next is the Calder Trophy for the league's top rookie. Please welcome sports talk show star Jim Rome and the American who pretends to be British while watching Premier League soccer on weekends.
James, there were some spot-on rookies having quite a go this year, not unlike the footballers of Leicester City, who were right firecrackers on the pitch the way these kids were anything but tossers on the ice.
The Calder Trophy is given to the NHL's best rookie. The best rookie wins the Calder Trophy. If there's a rookie and he's the best, he's going to win the Calder Trophy. End of discussion.
These lads are all deserving of this, so it's sure to drive supporters dressed in rival kits proper mental if those teams lose.
Here's the facts. Dear Jim, these rookies all have the juice this season, but I think Connor McDavid is a cut above. Signed, Orenthal. Rack 'em.
Righto, Governor. The finalists are Connor McDavid, Edmonton Oilers.
Shane Gostisbehere, Philadelphia Flyers.
And Artemi Panarin, Chicago Blackhawks.
And the winner is Artemi Panarin, Chicago Blackhawks.
Bloody hell and fuck all, loves. Artemi could not be here tonight. So yet again, since he's got nothing better to do, Mike Babcock will accept the award on Artemi's behalf, so jog on.
You know, Artemi is the kind of player that gives a 296%. Like his velocity. I like his gum line more than Taylor Hall's. Did I mention as part of my deal with the Leafs, I can use the CN Tower as a giant dildo on the weekends? Thank you.
And now, please welcome the musical guest for the Puck Soup NHL Awards, Vivian Wyshynski.
It's hockey time with Greg and Dave.
It's hockey time, hooray.
And now, it's time for the Norris Trophy. Please welcome film legend George Lucas and the stereotypical Italian character from every episode of The Sopranos.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Disney. For all the sacks of my... Tonight's nominees are the best of the best when it comes to defense and will do anything to stop an attack, much like the rebels that defended the base on the forest moon of Endor.
Oh, Endor? I can't even get my wife to give up the back door. Oh!
You know, I once created Watto, the winged Toydarian junk dealer on Tatooine. Some said he was a stereotypical Italian like you.
Hey, oh, if Watto was Italian, he'd have whacked that Anakin and made a bowl of gabagoo, oh!
Maybe I should just read the finalists, Jiggle Jiggle Neck Fat.
Oh, you do what you gotta do, I gotta do what I gotta do.
They are Drew Doughty of the Los Angeles Kings.
Oh, Brent Burns of the San Jose Sharks, oh!
And Eric Carlson of the Ottawa Senators. The envelope, please. Never really got many of these for the prequels. And the winner is Eric Carlson, the senator from Naboo. And now in a move that's likely to go over like Jar Jar Binks farting in a Death Star elevator, here's Mike Babcock to accept on behalf of Eric Carlson.
Eric is the type of player who gives 155.3% out there. Like his speed, like his sick frisee and endive salad he calls hair. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but with the contract I got from the Toronto Maple Leafs, I could individually buy the Ottawa Senators today and relocate them to my 8th bedroom. Thanks, Bell and Rogers, and thank you.
Please welcome, from SiriusXM, Christopher Mad Dog Russo, and from WFAN in New York, Mike the Sports Pope Francesca.
Good afternoon, everybody! How are you today?
Dog, I can't believe this announcer got my name wrong. I'm the sports pope, and he's getting my Francesco. Who the hell is Francesca? Anyway, we're here to give away the Jack Adams Award, which ain't going anywhere until I get my damn Jack and Diet Coke, okay? Seriously, this bartender is to drinks like Rick DiPietro is to afternoon drive time radio.
Mikey, The Jack Adams Award is given to the best coaches in the game. We're talking about hockey's answers to greats like Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker, Leo DeRocher, and John McGraw.
Dog, John McGraw with the 1895 Baltimore Orioles.
How many at-bats there, Mikey?
388.
What's the average there, Mikey?
He's a 369 hitter.
Nice, Mikey. Here are the nominees for the Jack Adams Award. First up, Gerard Gallant from the Florida Panthers.
Lindy Ruff, Dallas Stars.
Barry Trotz, Washington Capitals.
Easy for you to say, dog. And the winner is... It's Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells forever, everybody. No, sorry. The award goes to Barry Trotz. And here to accept on behalf of Barry is...
Oh, shut up, you whale. You big, fat, dumb, Diet Coke-drinking whale. Never. Not once has your boy Mikey Babs won this stupid award. You know who has? Brian Sutter. Bill Barber. Orville Tessier. Look, I might be on my 12th scotch, but what in the ever-loving fuck is an Orville Tessier? Thank you.
Thank you once again, Coach Babcock. And now, our final award of the night, the Hart Trophy. Please welcome from NBC Sports, Mike Doc Emmerich, and from the upper anus of Sidney Crosby, Pierre McGuire.
Nevada, the gold rush. People from across the United States of America traveling westward to discover nuggets of dreams and the ore of hope. But tonight isn't about gold, it's about silver. The silver of the Hart Memorial Trophy, named for Cecil Hart.
Doc and Edso, you gotta love the Hart Trophy. Wayne Gretzky at Brantford, Ontario, who played with the Indianapolis Racers of the World Hockey Association, won it 9 times.
It was in 1939 that Cecil Hart would walk away as general manager. Of course, the Pittsburgh Pirates would know a thing about taking a walk as they signed Bob Walk as a free agent in 1984.
Here are the nominees for the Hart Trophy. Jamie Benn, Colonial Rockets of the WHL. Sidney Crosby, Rimouski Oceanic of the QMJHL. And of course, Patrick Kane, Patty Kane, London Knights of the OHL.
Oh my! And Sidney Crosby and Jamie Benn have been waffle boarded away for your winner, Patrick Kane. He couldn't be with us tonight as he left about 20 minutes ago. So accepting on his behalf is, that's right, Mike Babcock.
It's me, Jeff Blaschel, coach of the Detroit Red Wings. Mike was arrested 10 minutes ago for trying to use the King Clancy as a piss pot, so I'm here on his behalf. Who was here on Patrick Kane's behalf? I don't got to say much. Eat more Little Caesars, so my new office and the new arena has a bathroom and whatever. Thanks.
This concludes the 2016 Puck Soup NHL Awards. Well, almost. Here's NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I haven't had a reception like this since the last time I appeared in public. I just wanted to thank the greatest fans in the world for their continued support of the National Hockey League, despite my best efforts. And I wanted to remind all of you that the World Cup of Hockey returns in September. Tickets are available. Sponsorships are available. Hell, for the right price, you can still enter a team in the tournament. Where are you at, China? Seriously, we gave ESPN the rights to the World Cup of Hockey, and during the NBA final, they promoted the 2 a.m. Sports Center more than this tournament. Please don't make us crawl back to the IOC begging to go to Pyong whatever. Thanks, everybody.
Well, that's the 2016 Puck Soup NHL Awards. Any final thoughts there, Mike?
Just two. The final two thoughts are, one, I think we probably should have thought twice about booking the stereotypical Italian Sopranos guy and Francesa back-to-back. That was probably a mistake on our part. And I'm pretty sure Mike Babcock just threw up in my gift bag.
Oh, no. Thanks to announcer Chris Wilson. And we'll see you next year, everyone. We'll be probably doing the show from way off the strip. Bye.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. Patrick Kane's out there somewhere.
Welcome to Talking, the 2016 Puck Soup Awards, with your host, Greg Wyszynski, and Dave Lozo.
Oh, thank you so much,
Chris
Wilson. Thank you so much. Yes, welcome to Talking 2016 Puck Soup Awards.
The after show.
The after show of the official 2016 Puck Soup Awards. Thank you to Chris Wilson.
Thank you, sir.
Our trusted friend and the best announcer in the business.
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, he's the best announcer this show has ever had.
It's very true. Dave, the show that people just heard, obviously recorded before the NHL awards, we assume that they were all right. Well, Those are the ones that we all think are going to win.
They're our awards, so technically we can't be wrong.
We can't be wrong.
Right.
If there's one award, as people listen to this the day after the awards, if there's one award that you were nervous about, what would it be?
Like in terms of it being like correct?
In the terms of us not getting it right.
Dowdy. I still have a bad feeling.
I have a bad feeling about Dowdy as well winning, and I also feel like maybe there's always a chance that they're going to go in a different direction than...
Panarin?
No. I think Panarin... You know, the Connor thing had me nervous, and then I saw the only two people that voted for Connor were Steve Simmons and Damian Cox.
Steve Simmons has me blocked on Twitter, I noticed yesterday. I've never tweeted at him once. I feel like I wrote a thing when he was dicking around with the Toronto Raptors, and I think you probably read that.
Damian Cox does not have me blocked, which really came in beneficial lately.
He still has his account locked down as of taping of this episode,
which I think is crazy. Ask someone for a photo.
But, like, here's the thing about that. Like, I feel like he was already engaged in a conversation with somebody who I feel like they were probably already exchanging photos.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, I understand
it
he's not a single man. But
not the thing that had happened a few times of creeping.
Like, he wasn't cold calling somebody for naked. He was just middle of a conversation, slipped into a tweet. But, like, I feel like he's been locked down now for, like, a week. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what that's going to
do. I think that's probably Sportsnet PR protocol.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, though, is that, like, the greatest thing about the internet is like when you are someone who is a hot takeist like Damian Cox is, and I run hot and cold, I'm gonna be honest with you. Like I don't nearly have the same vitriol for Damian that I do for someone like Simmons, who just basically quit on life and quit on logic and just decided to just be this
just
fucking caricature,
destroying people for no reason.
But when you're someone who is clearly, you know, poked the hornet's nest as much as Damian has when it comes to social media and fans, the amount of amazing content that was generated by that wayward tweet or wayward DM, where, you know, you had Leafs fans tweeting, "Hey, Damian, got a selfie for you," and it's like them pulling their tank top back to reveal their male breast.
So here's the story. So me and Wish were out doing trivia that night at a bar.
That's right.
And we saw the tweet while we were doing our thing. So we both decided to send like tweets that were supposed to be DM responses. And I, like, 4 days later, somebody sent me a text with a screenshot of my tweet, and it was like, "What the fuck was this?" And I'm like, yeah, I guess if you don't follow Damian Cox and me, and we're on Twitter at 7 o'clock at night on Wednesday, you don't get what I was doing.
Yeah,
and it actually really looks like I was, because my tweet was like, "I can't stop farting and I'm bloated, so I can't send you a selfie right now."
It was funny to you and I, much like the
that's all that matters.
First
yeah.
18 minutes of the show. you're nervous about Dowdy. I'm nervous about Coach of the Year, but yeah, whatever. And the awards are whatever they are, and I'm sure that Dave and I will be giving our takes on Twitter if you want to see our reactions to the actual show. Let's pause on Sportsnet for a second.
Yes, let's talk about that
on the other show that I do.
That's a
Sportsnet production.
It's like you know, it's like not liking your wife's friend. You can't really tell her about it, but you can tell me about it.
My wife.
She a worker with the Strombo.
By the way, stay tuned for the DVD extras of the awards show as we do all the impressions that we wanted to do for the awards bit, but didn't. Borat, the bug from Men in Black.
Yeah, sugar
on there.
And water. I could not do that voice for much longer because then I sound like Cookie Monster. And then the joke don't make sense when you make bug joke.
Much like how my Mike Babcock at some points morphed into my former college roommate, Monkey Boy from Wayne, New Jersey.
I feel
Hello.
Bad for...
Hello. Oh, you also like the Smashing Pumpkins? I like the Smashing Pumpkins too.
Like people are so used to the rhythm of the show probably at this point where, you know, you start it, you know, you get the SeatGeek thing, you get the song, and then like we talk for 10 minutes and just going to go right into a thing that you're just not ready for.
You're ready to a thing and you're like, this is terrible. Where does this actual show start?
Like, where can I cut this off and start the regular thing?
Well, much like everything else in the show, it was funny to us. Okay, so it's George Strombolopoulos is no longer the host of Hockey Night in Canada. They go from Ron McLean to Strombo to Ron McLean, which to me makes Ron McLean the Randy Carlyle of television hosts.
The Jay Leno.
We got this guy. He took us to the promised land. But now we are going to go in a different direction because maybe he's not as well-liked as he used to be. We're going to bring in someone else who's going to bring in some pizzazz, and we're going to skate up and down the ice and do the thing. Except now we realize that maybe we're not even as successful as we were before, so we're going to go back with what we know to the guy who clearly maybe his time has passed as being the head of the show.
See, like, the hard part for me is, like, we're not Canadian. Like, I don't watch Strombo. I don't watch Hockey Night, so I have no idea how good he was or how bad he was. Like, I'm just going off of the, is it Toronto Star, Toronto Sun story, where they were like, oh, well, people at the executives, producers were saying to him, like, you know, maybe don't wear skinny suits, you know, maybe change your, and it's like, not for nothing. Like, if you actually have a dude who can sit around and talk about hockey, who can fit into a skinny suit, and like a skinny tie, like, you know, one of those Sean McKenzie jobs. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look good enough in one of those that you can pull it off, why would you want to not have that on your show? And why would you want to have more dudes wearing like frumpy suits that just fit over your expanding body? Like, the whole thing about him being a VJ and all that stuff. Like, again, maybe he wasn't good. I have no idea. It's so hard to talk about. But like, the ratings weren't bad because he was wearing skinny suits. The ratings were bad because he had no Canadian teams in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and the Maple Leafs have blown for 2 years. There's no way you put that on.
Yeah,
Strombo.
Like they had their worst ratings ever, or whatever, in a season in which the team that's always on was intentionally
trying to lose
as many games as possible. The thing about Strombo when I would see it. And, you know, in full disclosure, like, I work for Sportsnet, so I can't be too critical here or whatever, but, like, I feel like maybe he was miscast. And we talked about that with Roenick before, me and you, like, the idea that Roenick would not be the abomination that he is on NBC if they would just play to his strengths. And I feel like in Strombo's case, it's the same thing. It's like, this guy is, without question, one of the greatest interviewers I've ever seen. A Howard Stern-level interviewer, as far as, like, what he's able to get out of people, the rhythms he establishes. His talks with Gary Bettman, if you can find him on YouTube, are some of the best interviews I've ever seen with Bettman. Like, Bettman actually, you know, lets the chainmail down for a second and lets information slip and opinion slip. It's pretty crazy. But when his job is to try to make the show hip and then throw it to Nick Kyprios,
I know, right?
Like, it's hard. That's not playing to his strengths. His strengths are sit him down with four people on comfy couches and just have them roll. But it's television. You can't do that because you only have an intermission to do it in or whatever.
But is it like a Jonathan Drouin on the fourth line situation, or is it just like he's Patrick Stefan and isn't what people thought he was going to? Because I don't know.
I thought he was fine. Like, yeah. I feel like you have to give him more than a year to grow into the role. I feel like the problems on that show, and, you know, I don't think it's any secret or speaking out of turn to say that there's a likability challenge with that show, especially vis-a-vis what TSN does, where everybody looks like TSN literally looks like everybody's wearing a warm sweater and has a cup of cocoa for you when you tune in. And then Sportsnet comes on and it's like a bunch of angry white guys in like an industrial complex and they've been locked in there to talk about hockey.
Like, I've never seen Nick Kyprios smile, I don't think. Well, he never seems happy.
There's going to be major really changes intense. That happen there. But what
is Strombo funny?
Strombo can be very funny, yeah, but I don't know if he's really funny on that show. The thing with Ron McClain is this. Like, Ron does you could look at it two ways. You could look at him as being the Randy Carlyle of hockey television, and where they're bringing somebody back who didn't work, you know, at the end of his tenure, and now they're bringing him back to try to recapture the glory. Or you can look at the Strombo year as Billy Crystal on SNL when Lauren left. They had that weird ass season. Maybe it wasn't Billy Crystal's year. Maybe it was definitely the year where Anthony Michael Hall was on. It was like that weird ass 1 year where like Jim Belushi was on, Anthony Michael Hall was on. I think that was Christopher Guest. I think Billy Crystal was that year too. And then Lauren came back, and then you had the Eddie Murphy years after that.
I didn't realize there was that 1 year of SNL.
There was. There was a year where Lauren wasn't there.
I thought it was all Lauren.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, he got into a big fight with the president of the network and left, and then he came back, and then the show became the show again. So you could look at it as the show becoming the show again. But here's the thing, like, when I would watch Hockey Night in Canada, and granted, like you said, we're Americans, so we didn't. But when I would watch it, the thing that I loved was the hot stove thing. That'd be the thing I'd watch every week.
That's like, the one where like they sit around and talk about the
They were all at a big table. Ron was at the head of the table, and he would be like, Pierre LeBrun, what do you have this week?
Well,
Scotty, got some rumors.
You know, and like it would be everybody giving their best rumor and then debating the topics. But what happened was when they eventually, like when those other guys would, all the insiders moved to TSN outside of Elliott, like then when you have is like the hot stove league table, and it was like PJ Stock. And I like PJ, but he's not exactly like Joe Insider. Yeah. He's not spitting the knowledge there like Drager and McKenzie are. So like, I feel like the show needs to change. It needs to morph. It needs to be different. And it kind of makes me upset that Strombo didn't get a chance to be the head of that table.
Here's my complete guess without ever watching the show as to why people didn't like him. He's kind of got dark skin. I'm serious.
Like, and he had a stud earring.
He's got an earring. Mm-hmm. He's got an ethnic-sounding last name that's hard to pronounce for people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Most hockey fans are white dudes that are shitty a-holes. And I just feel like that comes up on your screen when you've been watching like old white men for years and years and years, and you have a shitty reaction to
Should have learned their lesson. And, I mean, if you're going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars, don't do it with Greece.
What do you mean?
Because Greece is bankrupt.
Oh.
He's Greek.
I was having a Veep moment where I was like, wait, Greece the play or Greece the country?
Jesus Christ.
Sorry. No, but like, yeah.
This is why everything we do should be scripted.
Hi, I'm George. And welcome to the Puck Soup 2017 Awards. No, but like, I just picture like, imagine any other human being hosting, like, imagine if, like, you heard, like, NBC was like, yeah, you know, we told Liam McHugh to stop wearing pocket squares and pastels, and, you know, he didn't take, dude, that would never happen. It just seems like a weird sort of, like, cultural, like, and he's not even that young. He's born in 72, so he's carry the one, but 42 years old. No, 44 years old. So, like, it's not even like he's, like, this, like, young punk who comes in on a skateboard and is like, hey, you squares.
Oh, you're saying he's not Poochie.
He's not Poochie.
Like, but he did go back to his home planet.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, I would bank. Like, I feel like it's less about ratings when shit's bad, and I would err on the side of like people just not liking somebody who's not an old white man.
Yeah, it's
but
tough.
I don't know. I am an old white man. So,
but all they like the old white men on TSN though.
Yeah.
Although Duthie's young. Duthie's the real key to the whole thing.
Like Duthie's. White guys.
Duthie as the host on TSN really kind of makes everything better. Like, he elevates everything. He's a guy you want to watch. Watchability is a very big thing, and I don't think a lot of the guys that are currently in the mix on Hockey Night in Canada have it.
Right. Like, whenever trade deadline or, you know, free agency comes around, like, TSN's show is the one you watch.
Away,
right. Like, I've never watched the Hockey Night one, but, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm nuts. I mean, if you're Greek, you're a white guy, you know? I just feel like hockey fans are idiots, and you just show like the slightest bit difference from anyone else around you, and you know, maybe, oh, he's from music, he doesn't love hockey the way everyone else does. Like, I don't know. But again, this is all me.
He's from music, by the way, is as much code as he's a New York lawyer.
That's what it is.
For Gary.
Like, right? Seriously, oh God, I can't imagine being Strombo. I'd love to get Strombo on to be like, what was it like the first time some dick came up to you and said, stop wearing cool suits and skinny ties? I would have fucking flipped out at that. What are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Have you seen what Don Cherry wears?
Seriously?
It's like fucking motel wallpaper every night.
It's insane. Oh, so you're telling me I'm young, good looking, I'm hip, and I know how to talk on TV, and I'm a great interviewer, and your problem with me is my pants? Like, really? You dick.
I know. Speaking of the Leafs, by the way, Freddie Anderson's now the franchise goaltender.
Weird.
5 years, $25 million. They traded a 30th pick overall in the draft and a second rounder next year for him. And, like, I got no problem. You say it's weird. I got no problem with it. Like, there is a – look, if you're looking for a guy who's going to be your guy, how many 26-year-olds with playoff experience, a decent body of work, a guy who's shown the potential to be quite good – are out there, and if you find one, you got to get it. That's why the Schneider deal with Lou was great, because he saw the opportunity.
Oh, but he's, and
he
got so much better.
Oh,
than
I'm not saying
Anderson.
That they're in the same league.
But
I'm
they're
just
getting
that,
paid about the same thing, right?
But you have to.
You don't have to.
What are you gonna do? Trade for him and then lowball him? And he's like, "You're the Leafs. I'm the first guy you're gonna lowball."
Freddie Anderson's played 125 career NHL games. Save percentage .918.
Yeah,
he's average. Like, he's not. Like, Corey Crawford gets paid too much. I always see Mark Lazarus on Twitter whenever a goalie gets signed. He's always like, you still think Corey Crawford's getting paid too much?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Kind of. Corey Crawford is Brian Bickle,
right.
But he's better.
But he has a team in front of him that can make him better.
Well,
and
that's the gamble.
Tara Vinen's leaving. That's
But that's
Crawford's
the gamble with Freddie Anderson, is that, like, you get him to play in a Babcock system, and you assume that his numbers are going to be commensurate with that system. A system that, by the way, almost put Chris Osgood in the Hall of Fame.
But, yeah, a system with ridiculously good players playing in it. Toronto's not going to have that next year. And Toronto's, again, his numbers aren't all that different than Jonathan Bernier's. I'm like the last living member of the Jonathan Bernier fan.
Apparently.
Where I would have just said, you know, give the dude one more. I mean, he's played the last 2 years behind terrible teams. Like, if you put Bernier in Anaheim for 125 games and Anderson in Toronto for the same time period that Bernier's been there, just the past 2 years, their numbers would probably just be swapped.
Yeah.
I don't think, and $5 million a year, I feel like that's like the opening offer that Freddie Anderson's agent should have given Toronto. And they would have been like, all right, that's a good starting point. And then, nope, doing it, done. That's a good deal. 5 and 25. Yeah. But like, if you're going to, like, next year, they're not going to tank. Toronto's not tanking next year. So I get why they want to get better. But it's like, Jonathan Bernier is going to be there next year. What if Jonathan Bernier playing behind a better team is like a 922 goalie?
Then you get yourself a nice little goalie competition.
For a year, and then you're going to be left with a guy who's not as good as Jonathan Bernier.
Listen,
for four more years.
I agree with the idea that goaltenders are either, you know, the single greatest investment you can make, or a fucking albatross. And in some cases, they're great investments. Like, you know, Lundqvist, great investment.
Yeah.
Like, there's some guys that have worked out.
Although, up until
Schneider, like Pekka, like Tuukka, they're all great investments. But then you get guys like Mike Smith and, you know, Jonathan Quick now, apparently.
Okay.
But I think that's recency bias because of Martin Jones.
Okay. So what's Corey Schneider making? 7?
I think he's making 7.
Say it's 7.
I'll find out for you in a second.
I think it's 7.
I have the internet here.
I think he's making Tuukka Rask money. Maybe he's making 6. He's making more than Freddie Anderson, and he's very, very, very good and very worth the dollars. But since the Devils acquired him, he split time with Marty Brodeur.
6.
6.
Yeah.
So 6. So Freddie Anderson,
6 over 5. 7.
And Corey Anderson. But, like, okay, so last year the Devils were a bad team, and they were probably trying to tank, and it didn't work because Corey Schneider was so good.
No, because of that bastard. Right. They pay him too much.
And what's the Devils' first move this summer is to add Mark Savard's contract.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the point of having a $6 million goaltender who's worth it when your team is bad around them? And so I don't think
the team was going to crater the way it did, though.
The Devils are trying.
Yeah, the Devils. And that's, to me, the real issue with goaltending, is that the thing that makes it go from being a really smart investment to being a bad investment is the trajectory of your team, not necessarily the poor play of your goalie. Like, I mean, in Mike Smith's case, it's the poor play of your goalie, but it's also the trajectory of the Coyotes. You know, one contract that looks like a pretty shrewd investment. Like Fleury. I mean, like, you know, Fleury's contract looked great until all of a sudden this kid comes up, nearly wins MVP of the playoffs. Now all of a sudden the contract is an albatross.
Yeah. I guess, like, if you go Bernier Sparks next year and then Bernier is awesome, you got to pay him.
Meet Garrett Sparks.
That guy had a really good run of terrible movies in the 90s or whatever it was.
Yeah, so Ladybugs.
Ladybugs.
Meet Wally Sparks.
Meet Wally Sparks.
Rover Dangerfield, the animated Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Oh, God, I had forgotten about
that. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Man.
But he wasn't... Was he in Caddyshack 2 or did he avoid Caddyshack? I think he avoided Caddyshack 2. Maybe he didn't. Like Dan Aykroyd replaced Bill Murray.
Right, Jackie Mason's the...
Jackie Mason replaced...
Jackie Mason's
replaced
Ryan Dangerfield.
Rodney, right, yeah. Yeah, Rodney... It goes pretty much Caddyshack, Easy Money, and then that's it for Rodney.
Easy Money might have been the first movie I ever saw boobs in. Remember the scene where the neighbor's laying out? I think I was probably like 9 years old, and I was like, oh. I don't know what's going on here. But
I know exactly the first movie I ever saw boobs
in. What is it?
There's two of them, actually. I don't know which one I don't know which one came first. And I didn't mean to come. I didn't use come first in that sentence.
It was the Sean Penn movie Color and 101 Dalmatians. The dog was feeding the other dogs, and that counts. So, yeah, that's good.
It was Debbie Does Reno. I don't know why my dad showed... It was my pick for family movie night. No, it was either the scene in Airplane when everything is going crazy on the airplane, and all of a sudden the girl with the boobs runs in front of the camera and just, like, jumps up and down inexplicably and then runs off screen. It's either in Airplane 1 or it might be in Airplane 2, the sequel. I forget which one it's in, but there's definitely boobs in one of those movies. But I think the first one probably was just one of the guys. The single greatest boob scene in the history of adolescence in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, like, kids today even have that moment because of, like, porn on the internet.
No way.
There's no way they had that first movie
Their first look at boobs is on YouTube, probably.
when they're, like, using your phone as a kid and they're, like, watching, like, candy being unwrapped and they just, like, tap the wrong button. And next thing you know, they're, like, on Pornhub. Like,
yeah.
Daddy, what are these eggs? No, son.
Oh, no, my daughter is always watching YouTube. She's watching that dumb asshole who's, you know, his entire family plays Skylanders and then they do comedy bits and he's just... popping out more kids because they need more cast members. Come on, honey. I need a straight man for my hijinks. But, like, she's playing on the YouTube and all I can think of is, like, when am I going to have to look over and be like watching her being like, hey, guys, it's me, the dildo queen. I'm just like, oh, fuck. How did you get that? Well, I was looking at Queen.
I searched Yas Queen and I typed in Ass Queen by accident. And then next thing I know,
Disney Queens. And then I hit D Queen and this came up.
I love the progression of conversation from Freddie Anderson's contract and the cap hit and how it pertains to the Leafs for the next five seasons to boobs to your daughter.
You're in Puck Soup.
Bop, 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 ba-da.
The going rate for goalies is whatever. The thing that has me excited about the next week and the draft and then free agency after it is, and this is not necessarily an original thought. I'm stealing it from my other radio wife, Jeff Merrick. I feel like we're going to see some offer sheets, man. I feel like all these little newbies that are taking over these departments, the egghead analytics guys and the new GMs, especially in like Florida and places like that, I don't think they're beholden to the old boys network, and I think we're going to see some offer sheets. The only thing that keeps me from believing that we're going to see offer sheet madness is the constant threat of someone then offer sheeting your guy. So in Florida's case, like, they've got cap space out the wazoo. They've got money, you know, they got the whole thing, they've got these new uniforms to sell. Like, I could totally see them offer sheeting somebody, especially on defense. But then you got to worry about somebody doing it to you with Ekblad. That's the only thing that keeps these teams in line is the Dean Lombardi's that they're like, gonna come wet my guy. Go ahead, make my day.
I'm gonna put meth in his pants and he's gonna get arrested. He's not gonna be able to play in the NHL next year. How about that? Allegedly, that's what he did by me. Here's the thing. Last summer, there was all the threats of it, right? Dougie Hamilton, Brandon Saad. This year, with the cap not going anywhere, I don't know if there's really any teams in a position outside of, like, Arizona and the Devils who have the room to do it and sign their guys. Like, I was looking it over yesterday. Like, if say the cap sits at, what is it, going to be 72? Something like that,
yeah.
Like, there's so few teams that have they barely have the room to sign their own guys. They're trading guys and attaching them to bad contracts so they can get Nick Schmaltz on the friggin' roster.
That's why the Red Wings are fucked.
Yeah, like
with the Datsuk thing.
I was looking at that too. Like, there's pretty much the Devils and the Coyotes are the only two teams that can take Datsuk's contract.
And everybody was like, why can't you just trade Datsuk like they traded Pronger and they traded Savard twice? I'm just like, because one, who's going to help out the Red Wings? Two, it's a completely different time of year in which you're trying to make that deal as opposed to the trade deadline.
And the cap hit.
And then three, you got a ticking clock because you want to use that cap space on July 1, presumably to try to give Stamkos an offer. And then, like, everybody knows it.
Right. You have all your own RFAs to sign. So, like, come July 7th, how many teams are going to be able to take on $7.5 million?
Oh, that's why someone should offer sheet the fuck out of the Kaiser.
Yeah, but then you have to have Danny DeKeyser.
Oh, come on.
Boom.
Oh, no.
Zing. No, he's fine. He's a good defense.
The thing I'm excited about with the Stamkos sweepstakes, by the way, is the creeping notion that it's going to be Buffalo coming in with a mega wombo offer.
I was pushing that today. I think if I'm his agent, I'm like, dude.
Just at least Buffalo. Get the offer out of Pegula, right? Like, you don't have to go there.
Right.
Like, I'm only going to Buffalo because I have to for the draft.
But. Like, I was looking over our questions. By the way, that's another thing, too, we should talk about is how Cleveland wins a sports championship, even though Lake Erie won one first, but whatever. Cleveland Cavaliers, so now Cleveland's no longer the loser city.
Yeah.
And people were all pushing Buffalo on me. Like, no, but Buffalo's only got two teams.
Right.
I don't think you can count that as the loser. So, like, to me.
Oh, right. If you don't have a basketball team or a baseball team, like, how are you the big loser city?
Like, and the one I kind of forgot about. That I thought DC, I thought, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, they get to divide up the losery stuff up there. Atlanta.
Well, Braves.
Braves won a World Series in 95.
That's Falcons won when?
Falcons didn't win anything.
They didn't win the year with Jamal Anderson?
They lost to the Broncos.
Oh.
They lost to the Broncos. The Braves are bad as hell right now.
And then they've lost two hockey teams.
They've lost two hockey teams. That was the thing. I was like, well, they've only got three. I'm like, oh, wait, they lost a team to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Like, Buffalo's not – I mean, Buffalo's had probably more brutal losses between cheating Brett Hull
But you're right. You need at least three teams to be in that conversation of – like, you need to have the Cleveland setup. Football, basketball, baseball. Because, like, if you're going to not have that as the minimum, then – good luck trying to trump Jacksonville.
Right. Yeah, I know. Like, Tampa at least has the Lightning. They've won something.
Right.
But it's just so funny to me how, like, so many people from Buffalo were like, no, we're the losers now. It's us. Give us the credit. I'm like, you don't want this. You don't want people, because the second Cleveland, you win, they're going to hate you.
Cleveland was in a different, like, outside of LeBron leaving for Miami, like, they were in a different level of pain. Like, you have Boston Red Sox, New York Jets kind of pain. yeah. of having won once and then having and I think Buffalo is in that category too, where it's not only did you not win for many, many decades.
So close.
The way that you've lost is infinitely more painful than you just suck. Like, Cleveland sucks. Like, Cleveland would just suck, and then they'd be like, well, now we'll try this with the... Who was that fat guy who used to coach with Belichick? Now, oh, who used to coach the Jets?
Not Charlie Weiss.
No, the other
Romeo
guy.
Romeo Crennel?
No, the white dude.
Eric Mangini?
Eric, yeah. Now we'll try it with Eric Mangini. And then that sucks. Now we'll try it with this guy. And then that sucks. Like, you know, there's no, like, heartbreaking Buckner moment. No butt fumble.
No, they've had their stuff. The Broncos comeback and the AFC Championship games. Ernest, did you watch the 30 for 30?
But that's all we have with the Ernest Biner thing. Everything else is just disaster after disaster.
Craig Ehlo trying to cover MJ at the buzzer.
Well, come on now. It's MJ.
I mean, I
feel like Cleveland's in a different category of pain and disappointment. Like, you think about the NHL, right? Like, the Leafs, how many... That's why that Gilmore-Gretzky thing has become legendary, is because that's one of the only moments that you look at and say, well, wow, they came so close. The other than that, it's like they've just been fucking terrible since 67.
Well, they have the Blue Jays. They went back to back. It's every team.
I just mean from the Leafs franchise.
Oh, just the one sport?
Yeah.
Because like in D.C., like you have Washington that won. They went back to back Super Bowls?
They won a lot. They've won at least like three, I think. But like in the Capitals case, like that's to me like Red Sox Jets level of pain. Like you've invented new ways to fail.
And the Nats have been doing that the last couple of years too, where they just lose in painful ways. So it's, and every team that's kind of the new bad city, or every city that's a new bad city, they've kind of won something in like the early 90s. And part of me is just like, that's not that long ago. And then I think about it and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be dead soon. I'm so goddamn
really
old.
Happy the Devils had that cup in 2003.
Like seriously, I'm like, the Braves haven't won anything in for, oh my God, 1995 was 21 years ago.
I'm going to feel really bad. Like, the time I'll feel bad about the Devils not having won for a while is when, like, someone getting their driver's license has no memory of a Devils cup.
it's Corey Schneider's kid.
We're getting there. We're getting there soon.
Oh man!
But you know, I think Buffalo is a special kind of pain. If Stamkos goes there, and you add VC and Stamkos to that team, and you got Lehner, who I actually like probably better than you, and you maybe add a little bit in the blue line,
right.
Like, they could be good real quick.
Like, I think they can be. I think there's like the East. Like, I'm still not 100% on Carolina. I can, because like Cam Ward is going to play 50 games again. Like, I don't know. That was the weirdest 24 hours where you're like, man, Ron Francis, patience pays off, saves the cap room, gets a great 21-year-old or 22-year-old kid. And then the next day it's like 2 years, $6.6 million for maybe the worst starting goalie of the past 3 years in the NHL. Like,
By the time everybody hears this, we might know where Stamkos is going. I have no idea. Maybe
that's
he goes
a good point.
July 1st. Maybe it's going to be like a...
Should we run through them all?
No, remember the Brad Richards situation where Brad Richards had was holed up in his agent's office that one summer, and like, and then like it was like the three wise men going to see baby Jesus and bringing him like gifts, and Brian Burke's like, I'm going to sell you on Toronto, Brad. And Brad's like, yes, please sell me. Here's a bucket of money. And Brad's like, thank you for this bucket of money. Hey, New York, look at the bucket of money that Toronto just gave me. Can you give me the same bucket? Wink for yes.
And then can you buy me out 3 years later after I helped turn your terrible franchise around in the most ungrateful move in the history of sports franchises? Thank you.
I don't want to predict where he's going because we'll look like assholes if he actually does not go there. So I'll
Buffalo,
say where I want
Buffalo
him to go.
For sure. It's happened. It's done. It's already happened. It's done.
Wait, now?
Well, I mean, by the time I listen to
it. Oh, shit. I thought you were looking at your computer and, like, during the show it's happened.
Well, he can't sign anywhere yet. We can talk.
Well, I thought maybe they traded his rights. Yeah. It could be a thing that happens. But anyways, I would love him to be in Buffalo because obviously I want only the best for Tim Murray. What did he say today? He said I feel
we have to use every tool at our disposal.
I feel Jack Eichel will be a tool for us to recruit, and if I don't use him, then I will be the tool.
And then he threatened and then he threatened Harvey Dent and said,
I'm just a dog chasing Stephen Stamkos. I wouldn't know what to do if I caught him.
See, by the way, going back to this being the Puck Soup Awards after show, when we were coming up with stuff, My idea was to have him do all the Mike Babcock awards things. And he's like, oh, my Mike Babcock's the worst. And I'm like, no, your Mike Babcock's the best, because it's the one impression where I can't tie it to anything else right after you do it. It's the best one.
It kind of lives on its own. It's not George Lucas and Kermit the Frog. Right. Or
right. Opportunity. It's a big opportunity for the
good. Like their compete level. Like their quit.
So I would love for Stamkos to go to Buffalo, only because I hope the best for that franchise, despite what Buffalo Sabres fans think. They're all very still mad at me because I had the nerve to say that they actually wanted Connor McDavid at some point. They're like, we wanted either one. I'm like, sure.
I'm not mad.
That's why everybody showed up in those Eichel jerseys during training camp, except no one did.
It's funny. I'm not mad that we didn't get McDavid. I think it's hilarious that we didn't get McDavid. You're the one that's angry, not me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
I actually really would like him to go to Detroit. Like, I like the idea of the Red Wings pivoting their franchise to something different and Stamkos being the face of the Red Wings. I also kind of love the delicious level of irony that would be Steven Stamkos going to Steve Yzerman's old stomping grounds and being the face of the franchise where Stevie was the face of the franchise.
And not going to Babcock's new place. Or
oh,
going to
God.
His place.
And just being a fly on the wall when Stamkos is like, you know, I just want to thank you for all the work. Oh, that's great. Where are you going? Oh, I accepted an offer from the Detroit Red Wings. Shut the fuck up, you bitch! God damn, of all the places! Of all the places, Steve!
And then in front of the camera, we just think it's great for him that he went there, and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, it really frees up a lot of money to sign all our other guys. Didn't go to Detroit!
Trade Ben Bishop to the Calgary. By the way, that's what's going to happen during the show, is Ben Bishop will be traded between now and Thursday, for
sure. Here's one thing that happened during the show that we should probably talk about. This I think is kind of interesting.
What do you got?
Mark Lazarus reports that Patrick Kane is staying and working out in Chicago this summer rather than going home to Buffalo. A source said that was at the team's request. God bless the Chicago Blackhawks. They're finally figuring it out.
Here's another tweet that I'm just seeing from Steve Zappay of Newsday, New York Rangers writer, who I rarely see him do like rumors, but he says, hearing the Blackhawks are seriously kicking the tires on Evgeny Malkin.
All right.
Like, I assume that Evgeny Malkin is a truck that some of the Blackhawks have named, and they're literally kicking tires on it, because that would just be the most insane thing for the Penguins to do. We've talked about Lazarus a lot on this. We should have brought him on.
I don't know if it's necessarily insane. Let's say they actually do that. Let's say they actually make that trade.
How would they fit it?
They would have to move a ton of salary to the Penguins, who also don't have any salary to take on.
Yeah, makes no sense.
But again, I guess Malkin's salary spot is pretty big, so you'd have to match that.
They say Malkin for Kane, straight up?
They already have Kessel, though. Like, why would they need Kane?
Well, apparently you're just not a patriotic American like Jim Rutherford is when he's going to make this.
You know
deal.
Who would be involved in that trade would be Seabrook.
That's the guy. Well, everyone keeps talking about that being a bad contract, but it's like if they didn't have him, they would have Keith Chalmerson and Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Like, it's such a bad contract. Like, that's the most necessary evil contract that I think exists in the NHL, where it's like, oh, it's going to get to Girardi-esque levels in a couple years, but I don't know. But going back to the Kane thing, it's a good thing he's staying in Chicago, because you won't get into any trouble in Chicago, a major city with bars up until 4 a.m. That's probably the best place to keep him if you want to make sure he has a quiet offseason.
Now comes the part of the show where we're going to transition to talk about the NHL draft for a second. And because of the draft coming up, I've decided to do something on the show that people really love, which is unfold paper on mic and also give my radio buddy Dave Lozo a bit of a quiz.
I'm going to get these all wrong.
A lot of people don't know much about the NHL draft. Admittedly, it's something that Canadians probably know more than us Americans do, being tied into junior hockey and all that. So I decided to dip into the first round and the draft projections and play a little game with Dave Lozo called NHL Draft Prospect, Vine Star, or Los Angeles Menswear Store. So I'll give you a name, and you tell me which category this name falls into.
What's the last one?
NHL Draft Prospect, Vine Star, or Los Angeles Menswear Store.
Oh, boy.
So I'll give you a name, and you tell me which category it falls into, okay? Let's begin. Hayes Greer, NHL Draft Prospect, Vine Star, or Los Angeles Menswear Store.
Hayes Greer. Can I get a spelling of Greer, please?
G-R-I-E-R. Mike Greer.
What is his country of origin?
I swear to God, I'm going to...
Hayes Greer is a draft prospect.
Hayes Greer is a Vine Star. He competed on the 21st season of Dancing with the Stars, which apparently has really lowered standards as to what constitutes a star.
21 seasons.
Okay.
Oh, is he just a dancer? Probably. He's probably not a star.
No, he does goofy things on Vine. He's the younger son of another Greer.
Oh, Rosie? Pam? What other Greers?
The four people old enough to get that reference are going to love it. Logan Stanley, NHL draft prospect, Vine star, or Los Angeles menswear store?
That's a draft prospect.
That is indeed. Defenseman for Windsor of the Ontario Hockey League. He could go in the top 20. So you're one for two.
Okay, that's good.
Riley Trufetti.
Trufti. That's a menswear store. Come on.
Riley Trufti is, I'm probably butchering the name, but that's okay. He's an NHL draft prospect,
wow.
A left wing from Fargo of the USHL, expected to go anywhere between numbers 17 and 25 in the upcoming NHL entry draft.
Huh.
Cameron Dallas.
I've heard that before. I've heard those two words together before. Am I thinking of the Fifth Element?
That's Corbin Dallas.
Corbin Dallas.
You are probably.
Cameron Dallas.
It's a multi-pass.
Cameron Dallas. Cameron Dallas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She sees it. It's a multi-pass.
Cameron. Come on.
I'll say menswear store because you haven't said that answer yet.
Cameron Dallas is, of course, a Vine star. currently has 7.55 million followers on Twitter.
On Twitter?
Yes.
By the way, speaking of Twitter, John Cena's on Twitter. And you wrestling people all follow people. And someone retweeted John Cena. And I clicked on his profile and I laughed my balls off because in his bio it says 15-time WWE World Champion. As if that's a real fucking thing. As if that's not a scripted thing that he was. That would be like David Schwimmer's profile saying paleontologist.
That's right.
That's insane.
It's like Daniel Craig's profile being like defeated Spectre.
It's like Jake Gyllenhaal's captured Zodiac. Like John Cena, dude, it's not real. You know it's not real, right? You're in there. But sorry,
okay,
guys.
So you're one for four. Andrew Christian.
Oh, God, see, I feel like I'm taking the SATs and I'm just circling the same box because I feel like I have
Well, you already got 250 points just by signing your name, so don't worry about that.
Andrew Christian.
Mm-hmm.
See, like, that sounds like a hockey player. So I think you want me to say hockey player, but I think... It's got to be a store, right? It's got to be
a really in your head now. What do you say it is?
I'll say it's the menswear store.
Yes, located in West Hollywood. It's a high-end underwear store with bedazzled boxers.
Oh, my God.
Andrew Christian.
I've been in Los Angeles twice in like 4 years. Why have I not gone to this store?
Two for five. We go to the next one. Dante Fabro.
Oh, see, it sounds like Robbie Fabry, who's
Dante
a hockey player.
Dante Fabro.
Dante.
Fabro.
Vine star.
NHL draft prospect, defenseman for Penticton of the British Columbia
Penticton.
Hockey League. USA Today has him at number 20 in the upcoming draft. Finally, Carlton Drew. Never trust a man with two last names.
Carlton Drew.
Carlton Drew.
Like he would be like the bad guy in like a sports movie who would like pick on the bench warmers. Carlton Drew.
Carlton Drew.
Vine star.
Menswear, located in Beverly Grove. It's a boutique store with high-end swimwear.
That was a
so
good,
I have
that
to say
good.
That
good.
You did not do as well as I thought you would on Vine Star.
No.
NHL draft prospect, Vine Star, or Los Angeles area menswear
but like,
store.
If there's three things I don't know anything about, it's draft prospects, dressing well, and Vine Stars. Why would I get any of those right?
What's your favorite thing about the NHL draft? Do you have a favorite thing? Do you like it? I find it to be fun because it's a place where I feel like a lot of trades and stuff go down there, like significant trades go down to the
NHL
draft more than
the only thing I like.
Anything else. Like, I don't think MLB is the same way. I think NFL, you see a lot of trades, but they usually involve jockeying for position
right.
to take certain guys. NBA has some pretty decent moves at their draft. But I feel like the NHL draft is almost like a bazaar you'd find somewhere in New Delhi. Like, you go there and you get some new things, you get some old things, and it's very exciting.
It's just like... like Bob McKenzie on Twitter last night was doing two days ago by the time you hear this, he's doing a little Q&A about the draft, like only about prospects and stuff. And somebody asked him, like, how many guys do you feel like could come out of this draft and play in the NHL right away? And he basically said the top three and maybe a fourth guy. Like, that's the thing I hate about the draft.
Yeah,
it's like once you get to like the middle of the middle of the first round, and like I've only covered the one in New Jersey and I stayed there for all seven rounds and I wanted to die by the end of the first round. Like, it was just so boring. Like, Seth Jones dropped and it was like, oh, Seth Jones. And then it was like Seth Jones, McKinnon, Drouin, that draft. And then the Corey Schneider trade happened at that draft, so that was like the most interesting thing. Yeah. And then Anthony Brodeur got taken with the last pick.
I feel like there's a lot of fakery. Like if you're a college football fan, you probably know the guy going 25th.
Yeah.
If you're a college basketball fan, you probably know the guy going 25th. If you're a hockey fan, you probably don't know the guy going 15th.
No, I honestly need
to be told whether or not it's a good pick.
Like, how many times have you and I seen Austin Matthews play hockey? Zero.
Well, I streamed his games in Switzerland, sir. I'm a huge fan of Zurich.
It's up till 3 a.m. watching Zurich play. Like, that's what I mean.
All
I know
is that he bears a very striking resemblance, almost disturbingly so, to Jeff Morrow, the sandwich king on the Food Network.
I don't know who that is.
He's on the kitchen.
That can be the next quiz: is Swedish hockey player, Food Network star, or?
I considered Food Network personalities.
Like, Austin Matthews looks like somebody, but I don't know. He looks like, you know, everyone says Aaron Ekblad looks like he's like 30-year-old man.
He does.
Austin Matthews has that look too, only without like the 5 o'clock shadow all the time. Like, he looks like I feel like he's going to be really good.
I'm familiar with maybe like the first 10 picks. I mean, Matthews is going to be great. Laine is my favorite player in the draft, only because I think he's got kind of explosive upside.
You mean Patrick Lane, as I've been calling him pretty much for a year? That's what I mean.
Pyarvi is
going to
be really good too. They're both two different types of players. Like, Laine's more snipey-snipe. Pyarvi's more of a skatey-skate.
I know Matthew could chuck because he has an awesome Twitter handle.
And also because he's the legacy. That's the other thing about the draft, too, is, you know, I get excited when we see legacies. Like even, like, Jacob Chychrun. Like, that's exciting for me to see.
Or, like, Joel Quenville's cousin or whatever got drafted by the Devils a couple of years ago. And I'm like,
the first time I ever felt old, like, real old, was when Landon Ferraro got drafted by the Detroit Red Wings. So I'm like, Landon Ferraro's son?
Like, oh, my God.
Like, please tell me he had him when he was 12. Also, I feel terrible.
Like, hockey's like horse racing, where, like, every horse is, like, you know, like, they name the horses after the horse that sired you or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, if Funny Side has a kid, the horse is, like, Dopey Side or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, like, hockey. Hockey, like, every dude is related to some dude who, like, who's the dude that had the Boom Boom Jeffron's grandkid?
Yeah.
He had the head injury and he can't play anymore.
Yeah.
Some guys go back, like, three generations, and it's just, like, it feels like the most elitist sport ever, but it's like the most salt of the earth sport.
You're saying that based on bloodline, you can tell who's like, going to, because Brent Gretzky.
Well, like, it doesn't stop people from drafting these people.
That's true.
That's the thing, is like, man, like,
fucking Stefan Matteau for the Devils, no less.
They used a first round pick on a dude who scored the worst goal in Devils history against them, because if his name was Stefan Jacques, he would have gone unfriggin' drafted. But I know that happens in all sports. Like, apparently LeBron James's 11-year-old kid already has standing scholarship offers from Duke and Kentucky.
Why wouldn't he?
Right. But, like, Michael Jordan's sons sucked at basketball. They didn't go anywhere. They played in college.
You know, it's always amazing to me, because, like, I'm not the biggest NBA fan, so I only found out, like, last year that Steph Curry is Del Curry's son.
I know. I didn't really know that either.
And, like, Del Curry was always, like, a pretty shitty shooting guard for like the Hornets or whatever, and like, you know, you see Steph Curry and he's like a mutant. He's just like a mutant shooter, and you're like, how does that happen?
Del Curry's wife is Storm, as you know. So, like, he's able to control the basketball the way
that,
he
right?
can control,
like,
the weather.
It's got to be like when two beautiful people mate and they make an even more beautiful child. It's got to be like, you know, you met somebody who's got some basketball gene you didn't possess, and then your basketball DNA mixes with their basketball DNA, and a beautiful Steph Curry is produced.
I'm telling you, I always wonder this too, because
we're basically making the argument for eugenics, by the way. I'll point that out right now.
Hockey players are basically like horses. You know, that's all they are. But, like, okay, those draft interviews where they sit down with the kids, how many draft scouts, if I'm a scout, I've always wanted to ask this of a scout, like, okay, you see this kid, right? He's 16, he's dominating in the OHL, and his parents are at the game, and you see his dad, and if his dad's like a small, like, overweight dude who's like bald, are you going to be like,
so it's like when you meet her mother.
Yeah, and you like size things up, and you're like, 40 years from now, that's not so bad. Like, I bet you scouts do that. They have to do that.
Mom's keeping it together.
Yeah, like, oh boy, Phil Kessel's dad, boy, he's what's going on here? This has been a really good conversation about using genetics in order to produce
hockey. We will produce a strain of hockey supermen.
Hail Hydra is now the new NHL's 32nd team.
That's right, exactly. I would give anything if I heard Gary Bettman on mic whispering Hail Hydra to Bill Daly.
Straight in his ear.
Speaking of which, the Vegas thing should be settled by the time this comes out as well.
Yeah.
Super excited about that. A lot of speculation about the team and everything. Is there anything in particular that gives you hope that Vegas will work, or do you think it's a disaster waiting to happen?
Like as a franchise?
As a franchise, yeah.
I think anything can work anywhere if you do it right. But I don't know. It's just like the population numbers tell me it can work. But I mean, I don't know. Like if you just dropped like an NFL team into a city that's never had NFL there, like I don't know. The London games. I don't know.
Anywhere in America, if you drop an NFL team in there, it would draw outside of Jacksonville.
I was thinking like in a non-US, like people always want to put like football
overseas
and stuff. Like it's different, obviously, but it's one game a week. It's eight games a year. I don't know. I think it can work, but it's just like this. I feel like the NHL is going to spend the next year selling this really bad idea that the team's going to be good right off the bat. And I get it because you don't want to have a full year of a population being told how shitty your team's going to be when it first shows up, because that's not going to be good for business. It's like when Arizona wanted to blow up the team.
Right.
And like Pierre LeBrun was like, oh, they're blowing it up in the desert. And the next day he's like, actually, they're not blowing it up in the desert because they don't want to spend a month having everyone thinking about your team tanking.
Per se.
So it's like Vegas.
Yeah.
I think if like people are willing to just commit to the long haul and like have a slow build, like they can be good. They could do good.
My two thoughts about it right now are, I wonder what it's going to be like for fans trying to get to these games. There's no mass transit to the arena. It's on the strip.
There's buses, no?
Thanks.
Oh, well.
How many times have you taken a bus here in this? Wait, you take a bus every day in this city?
How dare you, sir, insult my bus travel to Port Authority, which is fantastic, and it's better than the train. 126 or Hoboken,
I forgot,
folks.
Your entire existence coming to do this stupid podcast is sit next to some idiot picking his toes on the bus.
First of all, my toes are itchy, and I need to get to them, and I need to clean them out, all right? The bus is a good place to do it.
There's no train there, and parking is an issue. Like, parking is a thing where you're going to not, you know, what are you going to do, park at the Bellagio?
There's lots. They can build a parking structure and have it be a pain in the ass to get out of 41 nights a year.
And the other thing, too, is that, like, how many of the locals actually want to go to the Strip to watch a game? Someone said the other day, it's like, imagine if MSG was in the middle of Times Square. Right? Like, that's the thing. And, like, you got to fight through a bunch of homeless people dressed like Tinky Winky.
I know, right? You got some guy dressed as, like, Captain America trying to touch your kid. Like, yeah. Back off, buddy.
That horrible woman who is Hello Kitty but always keeps her mask up so you can see it's a person inside, and it looks like Hello Kitty has eaten a human.
There's... I don't know that one at all. Yeah. Yeah, let me just traumatize your kid on the way to the Rangers-Islanders game tonight.
Yeah.
I
don't know how the locals see going to the Strip to watch a game, to be honest.
I remember writing about this like a year ago, but the ECHL team, they drew like a decent amount for like ECHL, so I don't know.
That'd be fine.
Like, I just...
Everything the NHL ever touches turns to gold, so...
Like, once they get the $500 million, they don't give... good luck in the desert, idiots. Sucker. The NHL is... I'm telling you.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the way that Bill Foley was going to get the $500 million is by putting $250 million on black?
It's like Ocean's 13, where he has the whole entire thing set up.
They're the greatest thing ever. They, like, reward him the franchise. They're like, here you go. We checked your specs. Everything's cool. Welcome to the NHL, Bill Foley. Now, where's the $500 million? Ah, funny you should ask.
Funny
and then
story.
He just like drops $250 million in chips on black and says, Gary, watch this.
We either got an NHL team or I'm living on the streets.
Or welcome to the NHL Quebec.
Let's find out.
And then it comes up as 00.
It's like, all right, looks like we can't afford Dustin Brown's contract this season.
Gary's like, what happened to the franchise fee? And Bill's like, well, as soon as this loan for $250 million more comes through, right, I'll get you your money back plus an extra $250.
Let me ask you this. I've had this in my head forever. I feel like the NHL is just like two bad years away from just being like the USFL where they're broke.
No.
Because, like, okay.
The TV contracts themselves are going to sustain them.
Where's that money go? Where would you say the NHL is taking the MLB, the BAM money? And now they haven't gotten the $500 million yet, but so they're getting $100 million a year from Major League Baseball, and now they need a half a million dollars from a Vegas team.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see that money being put into besides pockets?
I don't know.
That's what I mean. Like, I just feel like it's just like this Ponzi scheme where like the people up top are just collecting money.
Well, there's they make a lot more hats than they used to at these events. I'm always seeing a lot more hats. So I assume it's hat research and technology.
It's just all
the one that has a graffiti on it and stuff. Like, that's clearly where it's being invested. I know what you mean, and it's actually one of the things that I find really interesting about this league going forward and other leagues going forward is you know, what are the revenue streams you've yet to tap? And for the NHL, that's why I think the NHL is an interesting place, because it's an international game. It's an international league. If you wanted to open up NHL Europe tomorrow, you could do it and make money hand over fist.
I don't know. You'd have to take over how many different viable
and China
leagues?
Like, China's another thing too. Like, China's a place where they want to go, and they've always seen it as a potential place where they can make a lot of dough.
Like, that makes sense to me as like a business idea. Like, this thing where they let like Major League Baseball run their stuff is weird to me. Just very very doesn't make a lot of
no. It's,
what sports leagues do
it
that?
Makes total sense to me as someone who works for a tech company where we try to make sometimes our own versions of stuff that exists. It's not as good, and then we just buy the thing that exists.
But, like, buying the thing that exists is one thing, but, like, you're Yahoo. I don't even know who Yahoo's competitors are. Like, Hotmail? Is Hotmail a competitor of Yahoo?
So much right now.
And you're like, Hotmail, we need $100 million to make our email better. And you're like, done. Like, that's what it reads like to me. Like, the NFL is never like, man.
We type into Lycos, how do we make search better?
Hey, congratulations. Bing is now going to set up our their business practices and like where the like okay, so like they've redone the website, which by the way, you spent how many minutes trying to find the schedule
the
on
schedules
today?
Came out for the NHL as we do the show today, and I literally couldn't find them on NHL.com. They sent a link that said the new schedules are out. The new phone books are here. New schedules are out. And then I went to go find it, and I couldn't find it. I had to go to each individual team. And then as I'm putting together the post for Puck Daddy with each individual schedule, the NHL then sends the attachment they forgot to send the first time of all of the schedules. Like, how bad do you have to be at life to not know how to launch a thing like that properly? It's just maddening.
It's just what they do. Like, and also they were supposed to hire like a beat writer, like the way MLB does for every single, and they haven't done that. Like, well, I don't know. I just wonder where the money goes. Because it doesn't look like it's like, imagine if someone's like, Greg, your house, which has your housekeeper in it who drinks all your booze. We're going to give you $1 million to fix up your house. Uh-huh. And you're like, thank you. I really, really love my new house. Yes. And then like I come by your house like 6 months later and it still looks like shit, but your clothes are all really
right,
awesome.
And, like, and there's like 75 more bottles of vodka.
Yeah, I'm like,
were there
wait, Greg, are you using the money for the best possible thing? Leave me alone.
What
record
if,
revenues.
What if, and this is just a big what if the NHL is building a super weapon? What if they're building Starkiller Base right now and we don't even know it?
Well, if that's true, if they're like this secret evil organization, I know they'll fuck it up.
The world, you're safe from domination.
Yeah, the world is not going to have to worry about that missile landing.
Now's the time of the show in which we read some of your listener mail. You're very considerate to support the show. Leave a review on iTunes, by the way, if you do like the show. It always helps out with the rankings and such. We begin today with our good friend Japers from Japers Rink, a gentleman who we very, very much enjoy being a fan of the podcast and being in life as well. And his question was about pizza.
It's a stupid question, by the way. Of course you eat. You got to ask the question.
Why? Hold on. Why do you think it's a stupid question? Let's just start right off the bat.
Well, you have to ask the question so people know what we're talking about.
Okay.
His question is, would you rather eat pizza every day forever or never eat pizza again, right? Like, why would I ever choose never eating pizza again? Pizza every day.
You'd be forced to eat it every day.
I would find.
So you're
time.
You're not saying 5 years into this as you're eating but let's put the specificity that Matt Warner wants on it, which is it open to all varieties of pizza? Because then it's not even all that difficult. And Japer says there's a lot of versatility here, but I'll close off that loophole. I'll say it has to be one type of pizza every day for the rest of your life. Or done. No pizza at all.
Done. Pizza every day.
What topping would it be?
I think if I was going to have pizza every day for the rest of my life, I would probably just go plain. I would just go cheese.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would go meat lovers. Bacon, sausage, pepperoni, all on it.
You know what the grossest pizza is? You ever see that CC's commercial where like the guy brings his kids and he's like, oh my God, look at all this pizza. And they show it like from above and it's like all different kinds of pizza. And I'm like, I don't want to eat that. I love pizza.
It's
gross.
All you can eat pizza.
Oh.
Have you ever been to a CC's pizza?
I don't think so.
It's like a crust that I would compare to maybe like a flaky pie crust. but it's not like deep dish. It's kind of gross.
Like they're all stuffed crusts too. Like
it's not.
It doesn't
look
good. But yeah, pizza every day over pizza never again. There's no way. I would get sick of it. But like it would be like taking a vitamin every day. My pizza vitamin. Slowly killing me.
Did you watch OJ Made in America?
I watched a lot of it. I thought it was pretty good.
Was there anything that was the most surprising revelation from what you saw? Empty Dubs wants to know. I'll say this about it. I thought it did a really interesting job telling me more about OJ's place in the black community. Like I didn't occur to me that like OJ was living the high life at USC while like Muhammad Ali and Jim Brown and all them were putting themselves out there as
oh, like
radicals.
That part of it.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I like that because it definitely, I mean, it's one of the reasons why that 30 for 30 is so goddamn good is because it ties everything together in a way that it's not been tied together. So when OJ then becomes the cause of the black community and they're go OJ go and they're backing him at the trial and everything,
right.
It's such in juxtaposition to what he used to be and what he had been throughout in his entire life.
I feel like I knew most of that though, just based on history and watching the friggin' FX thing. The part that I thought really stuck out to me in terms of like surprising was like we all knew like Darden effed up and tried to get OJ to try on the gloves and we all thought like, oh, he's wearing latex gloves under that. Like, you know, the gloves aren't going to fit. It's got to fit to his skin. But the creepy agent dude, the bald guy who basically was like he was like Satan incarnate during that thing. What the hell was his name? But like he was talking about how even before that day, he kept telling OJ to stop taking his arthritis medicine so his hands would swell. And like the way he tells the story, he's like, yeah, I told OJ, stop taking your arthritis medicine. And he's like, my hands are going to swell. And he's just like, yeah. And then he's like, the light went on for OJ. Like that part where like they were thinking yeah. so far ahead that like if they try the gloves on, yeah. that's going to help them not fit.
There was also that part where Dig Dug came out and fired his pumper into OJ's hands and inflated his hands before the trial too. That was pretty fun.
Oh, and the fucking the juror Yolanda, whatever, who was like this condescending asshole the whole entire friggin' thing, and she was just like, "I knew when Darden came out, he got played. He was stupid and an idiot." I'm like, "Lady, you voted OJ not guilty when he murdered two people. Like, are you seriously like throwing shade at somebody for being dumb in the courtroom? Like, are you serious?" Like, and there was like an older woman who was kind of just like more on the fence, like, "Man, maybe I screwed up," but at the time, but Yolanda right. was just like, "What a moron, ooh. Chris Darden!" Like, what? You serious?
Samuel York writes in a question. I'm going to rephrase it, though, for our purposes. Vinny LeCavalier is retired. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait for all the reasons Vinny shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, Samuel says. And, you know, listen, he's a tough one because without question, he was a premier offensive player in this league for a really long time. Who then kind of fell off dramatically by the time he hit around 31 years old. That's the issue. Like, no denying, 52 goals, 40 goals from 2006 to 2008. Good luck finding a better sniper in this world than Vinny LeCavalier. Maybe Ovechkin was at that time, too. But after that, he became kind of a role player, became a contract pariah. I don't know if I can say that Vinny LeCavalier would be a Hall of Famer, especially, you know, without a major award voted for him. He won the Richard and he won the King Clancy, but he didn't win any of the other major awards either.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
94th all-time in points.
Not a Hall of Famer.
6th in active goals, 76th overall in career goals. So 76, for those, I always like to look at the context, 76th in career goals, 421 for his career, puts him in Owen Nolan, Stefan Richie, and Steve Thomas territory. So I would say probably not for the Hall of Fame, although, you know, it does put him in, near Pavel Bure as well, but Bure obviously was a transcendent player.
Like from 02 to 08, like it's hard to figure this out without seeing like comparables because like 02, nobody was scoring goals. 07, everybody was. But like his 02 to 08, where he went 33, 32, 35, and then 52 and 40 is pretty good. But everything else is just everything else is just like real good or good. He's mm-hmm. not great. No Hall of Fame. No Hall of Fame for you, Vinny.
Finally, I like this question here from Jake Ibe because I feel like our brains are going to transition there pretty quickly after the draft is done. What's your go-to beach snack? You have a go-to beach snack, the thing that you like to eat at the beach? I'll say this right now. Ruby got me into going to the Rockaways and going to the Arepas place in the Rockaways. You know what an arepa is? So it's a little cornmeal pocket, and then you put meat inside of it and some cheese and some hot sauce, and it's really, really tasty. But I wouldn't say it's my beach snack. It's like a special snack at the beach.
My beach snack is beer. It's Miller Lite. And
now, do you use a beer koozie like my dad does at the beach, where it says like beach bum on it, and you put your bottle in there, and it'll stand up on the sand better that way?
No. Beer. Yeah, eating at the beach is weird. It kind of
is because of the sand and
like
stuff.
Eating outdoors is always kind of a tricky thing, especially in the summer when there's like bugs everywhere.
Also,
not at the beach, but
the beach is also dicey because you're dealing with animals that want to take your fucking food. Like, that's part of the problem too.
Like kids or
not necessarily kids. I was thinking more like Death from Above. Did you ever own a Seagulls T-shirt? By the way, I totally did.
No, what's that?
You've never seen Damn Seagulls?
Is that like Damn Yankees?
That's the T-shirt they used to sell at the Jersey Shore. It would be like a T-shirt, and it would just have big block letters that said Damn Seagulls, and then it would have white paint spilled all over the T-shirt, so it looks like seagulls shit on you.
No, but I want one now.
I definitely had one when I was a kid.
They still make them?
I don't know.
Never on a boardwalk.
Beach food is dicey. I would say if I had a go-to beach snack, you know what it would be? It would be your classic potato chip. Maybe a nice little salt and vinegar deal, like something a little bit puckery at the beach.
I think if I'm on the beach, I want to just drink beer. Whenever I'm outside in the summer, I pretty much just want to drink beer.
And now, hold on. If you were lounging in a lounger and you were at the pool, a really beautiful pool where there's beautiful women and men more beautiful than you or I.
Wow.
Would you be a beer guy or would you be a cocktail guy? Because I have to admit that in most situations I am lounging,
right,
be it on a beach somewhere nice or at a pool,
you want a
I am probably a cocktail guy versus a beer guy. But you and I are both thinking in Jersey terms, where you're at a giant, horrible public beach with people playing their fucking boomboxes without any headphones, and everybody smells, and there's back hair. Like, we're both thinking of the same.
That's the power to turn back time. Smug looking to the camera.
Somebody kicking sand at me as they listen to the Phillies game. You know why? Because Philly doesn't have a beach, because you'd have to go sit by a river. Instead, you have to come to South Jersey.
It's like tailgating, only with sand.
Oh, it really is.
That's all it is.
No, I mean more of a refined experience. Let's say you're at a pool at a really nice resort. Cocktail or beer?
That's a good question. I feel like I've done both, but if I had to pick one, I think I'd go margarita. I think I'd waste away.
Nice.
In Margaritaville. Searching for my sunblock because I'll fucking burn, man.
That's right. I always look for my lost shaker of salt even as I burn, because I like to season myself in the hopes that, you know, a monster will eat me. Anyways, that's Puck Soup for this week. Thanks to nobody. We had no guest.
It was a
free skate. We haven't had one in a while.
Thanks to Chris
for coming in and being the announcer on the NHL the Puck Soup, the first annual Puck Soup 2016 NHL Awards. Although I can't imagine you'd have an annual 2016 awards. Although maybe that'll be the tradition. Every year we do this, will just be the 2016 awards.
Over 2016 over and over again. Get it right the next time.
Coming up next week and in the coming weeks, we're definitely gonna have to talk about free agency. We have an idea that we want to do, and maybe we'll do it and maybe we won't. I don't know. It's if you thought the beginning of the show was repellent, the idea that we have is even more repellent than that. If that's possible.
Yeah, we got to figure out summer. We got to figure out what
we're
doing.
Yeah, we'll figure out summer and guests and such. But
like July.
When to slide in the Margot Robbie interview that we're inevitably going to do.
Margot.
Again, anybody out there has Margot Robbie, contact them.
Yeah, I've used all my avenues, which is publicist, friend.
Over there.
Friend and annoying her on Twitter, which I feel like she doesn't check Twitter, so it's not going to work.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Oh, we're doing that.
Oh, and also the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. The blog is Puck Daddy. Buy my book for summer reading. It's Take Your Eye Off the Puck, available at Amazon and wherever books are sold. I'm at Wyshynski on Twitter, and please do check out iTunes and leave a positive review for the show if, in fact, you find this to be a positive experience. And either way, thanks for listening. You've taken the time to download this nonsense or stream this nonsense, and we always value that. But Dave Lozo, please do your duty and take us home, sir.
So at the end of the first Independence Day movie,
you might have to go sit down again.
I mean, you might, because this has been bugging me since we talked about the sequel last week. So at the end of the first movie, there's the mothership in space, right? And then there's all the other ships that come down to Earth and blow up all the landmarks. And we have the one that's over Area 51, the one that Randy Quaid suicide bombs because he's out of missiles or his missiles jammed or whatever. So he flies up into the ship's laser beam as it's firing on Area 51, blows up the ship. This is after people die. They're out of missiles. They're running out of planes,
you
right?
You forgot the most important part of the whole
thing.
What's that? When he says, in the words of my generation, up yours.
Oh, I hate that movie. It's so bad. Why did they make a sequel? So it took, they lower the shields by doing the virus thing. Makes the ship, you know, vulnerable to attack. But the only way to blow it up is to blow it up as the laser's firing. And I'm assuming you can use a missile too, as opposed to just flying your plane into it. That's how they took the ship down. And when they take that ship down, Robert Loggia goes, everybody, get on your telegraphs and let the world know how to take down these sons of bitches. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching that movie and I'm like, what do you mean tell them what?
Like when they get these instructions, right. Look, what you need to do is make sure one of your missiles jams.
Yes.
Then you need to find a drunk redneck who was once abducted by aliens to fly up into a laser.
Boom, up there and blow up the ship. Hey, Colonel Loggia, this is Colonel Lozo over here in Los Angeles. We have a ship. So you're telling me that we need to actually have the ship hover over an important target with millions of people.
They love landmarks.
Open up the laser firing cannon.
Yep.
And then as that
right underneath, right where the how do you do should be.
Okay. And then don't fire until the laser's already firing. And then and you also realize that we've been devastated by the original attack, and we don't have many pilots or planes or missiles left at this point. And there's probably like a dozen of these.
How about a hang glider or? Or something, anything that can fly.
I don't understand how we won the battle anyway. Like, those things were so impossible to take down. Even if you have the plan. Okay, so the first plan took a lot of, like, you know, trial and error. And it's like, oh, tell those sons of bitches to fly Randy Quaid's drunk ass up into the thing.
First things first. Do you have a view screen that totally bites off the original Star Wars and shows the big circle of the ship getting closer and closer to the military base, much like the Death Star cleared the moon of Yavin?
Actually, no, we don't, because in the original attack that destroyed DC, we actually lost a lot of pilots and a lot of people that could actually fly planes and do combat. Like, they show the scene around the world where there's like four French dudes in a tent and they're like, oh, we have no planes.
They're all smoking cigarettes.
They're all like, I do not know how to take down this ship. Wait, hold the fuck on. You want me to fly my plane into the laser? What are you, crazy? Like, there's no way we won that war. There's no friggin', unless they were just like, ah, fuck it, let's go home.
So, yeah, you need someone in every location around the world where there's a ship to want to sacrifice their life and a plane.
Right. Because think about it. Like, they're probably like the first time you're like, all right, we're not going to fly Jacques. You know, we're not going to tape him to the steering wheel and make him fly into the laser. Let's just fire a missile into it. What if the missile doesn't work? What if you do need the missile, plane, and human being to sacrifice to kill everybody?
And I guess we're assuming that the virus they uploaded not only brought down the shields, but like killed any communication possibilities between ships.
Yeah, you might want to scramble the fighters around that giant anus on everybody's ship, because they keep flying planes up them and destroying the ships. It's a real hassle.
And also, not for nothing, we also dropped a nuclear weapon on our country halfway through that movie.
Negative.
My son's grown a third arm because of this.
I thought your initial point was how was Randy Quaid not destroyed by the laser, but the laser he flies into is the...
It's the pre-laser.
It's the pre-laser.
It's the premature laser.
You know that when you see the pre-laser, that's when you know that the rest of the laser is going
to
shoot out.
It's about to come.
Right.
And shoot
down. The rest of the laser is going to come because the pre-laser is there.
Yeah. There's no way we won that war.
But that's why he wasn't destroyed. The actual laser hadn't fired yet. That's like the targeting laser.
Right. So it's like, all right, so imagine in Star Wars, you have to hit the hole the size of a womp rat, but you can only hit it, but like the hole opens and closes really quickly.
First of all, I don't know if the hole was the size of a womp rat. He used to zero womp rats back on Tatooine. That's why he was a good pilot. But I don't think the hole itself was the size of a womp rat.
There's just no way. It's the hole, but like it's like a mini golf course, but there's like a windmill in front of the hole where you have to time it right every single time. But we have to do it 20 times to take down all the Death Stars. It's insane.
I could just assume that for the rest of the world, they weren't a bunch of assholes and didn't use all their missiles on things that had shields. Like maybe that, because that's why he had to fly that damn plane up the anus of the ship, is because everybody was shooting their missiles at things that couldn't be destroyed at that point.
Shoot 62 more of them.
Red 6, Fox 1.
Red Anus. Quaid 2.
apparently everything worked out. We destroyed all the ships.
So if Independence Day 2 wants to sponsor this podcast while it's in the second week of release, I mean, we've done a lot of free promotion.
I can't wait. I cannot wait for that movie.
It's going to be so bad.
It's going to be so great. It's going to be so great.
And something, too. Someone on Twitter pointed this out. The dude from Star Trek who's the long-haired scientist dude.
Yeah, Brent Spiner.
He's in it again.
Yeah, Professor Oaken. He didn't die in the first one.
I assumed he died.
The alien was manipulating his voice box with its tentacle.
I assumed
But he wasn't killed.
I assumed he was dead when he was doing that.
Well, he's back.
That's insane. And
thank God, because how can you do an Independence Day sequel without the incredible necessity of Dr. Oaken returning?
But until I put that together, I didn't, because there's a scene in the commercial where Bill Pullman is getting the neck thing done to him, and I'm like, oh, I guess Bill Pullman dies in the movie. But then they show Brent Spiner, and I'm like,
and Bill Pullman, I think they show Bill Pullman in a jet later too. Spoiler on the commercial.
Is there?
Yeah.
So he actually goes back. I'm assuming Bill Pullman dies during this movie. He has to have the heroic Bill Pullman. It's amazing how they got all these guys back, because Bill Pullman, Judd Hirsch.
Yeah, Will Smith back.
Did you ever hear the Opie Anthony and Patrice O'Neill bit about how unbelievably racist and Jewish stereotyping it was for the first movie?
Oh, Independence Day?
Yeah. It's so funny.
Oh, Patrice O'Neill, they got the whole bit you all would be dead with it if it wasn't for my David.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Like Judd Hirsch is the most stereotypical old.
But that's why Independence Day is so great, is because it trades in extraordinarily broad stereotypes. It rips off every single other sci-fi movie. The way I've always said this about Independence Day, the original one, is it reminds me of great hip-hop, where it's just a bunch of cliches about guns and women, and they just steal from better music and then mash it all together to make a new sound. That's all Independence Day is. It's great hip-hop.
It looks so bad. There's no way it can be worse than the
first
one.
Hell no.
And Vivica A. Fox plays a stripper. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just everyone in the movie.
That's right.
Everyone in the movie is the worst possible stereotype.
There's a giant fireball in the tunnel, and the dog escapes the fireball because that's what dogs do in action movies.
And also, apparently, that door that was broken open is now going to seal out flames.
I'm going to walk into the Independence Day 2. I'm going to walk right in, and I'm going to turn to whoever's next to me, because I know I'll be alone. I'm going to turn to whoever's next to me and hold up my cigar and say, "This is our victory dance."
This is our victory dance.
But not until the fat lady sings.
I ain't heard no fat lady. But seriously, go on YouTube and search Opie Anthony Patrice O'Neill.
The fat lady.
What are we doing? The fat lady is not singing.
See, the thing that's going to happen, though, is obviously it's just going to be a remake of the first film, just like every other, Force Awakens. But what is it? How are they going to top the uploading a virus to the mothership scene. What's it going to be? What are they going to do? They're going to disconnect their DSL.
I hope Will Smith does come back. They're just keeping it secret.
No, he died. He didn't come back. No. So they killed him off screen.
No, but instead of dying, the aliens actually took him and studied him, and now they're going to come back as Will Smith fighter pilot guys, and they're going to destroy. I hope the aliens win. Fuck Jeff Goldblum. Actually, I like Jeff Goldblum.
I am super excited for it. So to answer your question, every army around the planet had their drunkest pilot fly up the anus of every mothership.
They were out of
planes. And destroy it.
This makes no sense. So there's another movie, too, I was thinking of at the same time that has an ending like that, where you're just but I don't think we won, though. We won that battle. Oh, what the hell was it? There was another movie. It was just going to drive me insane. But they got to the end, and it was just it wasn't Superman, where an entire city of millions of people were killed.
I remember Deep Impact was like that, or one of those movies was like that, where the entire world has been smashed and destroyed, now we're going to rebuild it.
I'm going to think of this once we get done.
All right, well, there you go. That's all you needed to know about Independence Day.
That's it.
You were totally wrong about everything. That's how it completely makes all the logic in the world. That
get on your phones.
Yeah, that's right.
Call France. Does anybody speak French here?
That's the best.
Tell him we got it. Tell him what to do. Tell him how to take these bastards out.
Hey, here's what you do. You got to fly your... Hello? Hello? Oh, man, the call dropped. Can we get him back on the phone?
David, what happens when it goes down to zero?
Oh, yeah. And there's Harvey Firestein.
Checkmate. Oh, yeah, you forgot the best one.
I gotta call my mother. I gotta call my therapist. Yeah.
It's so offensive. Oh, my God. I don't want to do the whole Opie Anthony bit over again.
Luckily, like, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin, you know, toned down the racism for their next film, Godzilla, in which has an entire scene of Japanese tourists in the back of a taxi cab saying that they want to go.
We want to go shopping.
Oh, my God.
By the way, the most offensive thing that those two people have ever done as filmmakers was in that Godzilla remake when they were so pissed off at Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel for giving terrible reviews to Independence Day and Stargate that they named the mayor of New York Mayor Ebert.
No.
And they named his assistant Gene. And I think and Ebert, God bless him, always said he was so offended by it because they didn't have them crushed by Godzilla. Like, the least you could do is have us crushed by Godzilla.
God.
Yeah, there you go. All right, anything else you want to say?
No, let's go. Let's cut this off. Everybody, you know, do the usual thing. Be lit and stay loyal, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.